before we get there, and I don't intend to get there. The first couple of times I came here, I got told what I was to speak on. They seem to have stopped doing that. I'm not quite sure why that's changed. And so it becomes a little bit more difficult for me to think about what I should do because I'm here today and gone tomorrow. No. And so often when you're thinking about something to say, you think about how that fits in with the whole of the scriptures, which when you just come in once, that's more difficult to do. It's also more difficult because I looked at the list of people you have, and every week you get somebody different, although the last two I know very well because they used to be in my congregation. And so it's kind of interesting, and you kind of think, I wish I'd known what they've been doing. But when I was thinking about coming this morning and wondering what I should bring, I thought I wanted to call your attention to the book of Job, which is one of those books in the Old Testament. And I want to think for a little while about the 23rd chapter of that book. The whole of the book of Job is a story of one experience, really, in the life of this man. And we don't know very much about him, apart from what is written in this one book, which covers a very small part of his life. We don't know where he lived. Some of the commentators will tell you where he lived because it tells you early on, it tells the name of the place he lived, but we really don't know where that was. The name of the place is actually one of the names of one of the grandsons of Noah. So we don't know. Was he in that kind of time? We don't know. Where was it? We have no idea. What was the world like in those days? I don't have a clue. So all you know about this man is what's in this book. And the reality is, it's a book that we don't often turn to as our favorite book. I even wondered how many of you had read all your way through it. Because it's not one of the most easy books to read. It's not easy to read because a lot of it contains a conversation between Job and three of his friends. In actual fact, if you think about the book of Job, it splits down into four bits. The first two chapters tells you what's going on. It sets a scene for what's going to come after that. And it sets a scene in a really interesting way. That the first thing it does, it takes you into heaven. And there's a discussion going on between God and his enemy. And the thing that's interesting about this book is the whole of the book is based on what that discussion is as God boasts about his child. It kind of makes you worried that God would boast about you because it kind of puts you up on a pedestal for the enemy to have a stab at. And so you're never too sure. But I wanted to say this. Job isn't aware of that conversation. And so often in life, we're so taken up with what's in this world, we're unaware of what's happening in the heavenly realm. And we don't see the conversations that are going on. And we very often lose sight of the fact that God desires to bless us and the enemy desires to get us down. We don't see that. But that goes on in the first couple of chapters, as well as you're told something about the life of Job up to that point, and I'll get to that in a moment. Then, from chapter 3, right the way through to chapter 27, 28, something like that, I wrote it down so I didn't remember, I didn't forget, chapter 31, right the way from 3 to 31, there's a discussion going on between Job and his three friends. I'll get to that again in a moment. From 31 through to 38, there is a comment made by a man called Elihu. And then in chapter 38, God steps in and has a conversation with Job. And that's the whole of the book. But because most of it's this conversation between Job and his three friends, it's difficult. It really should be read between four of us, so you can see how the conversation plays out. But if I want to tell you a little bit about it, we don't know a lot about him, except we know he was a very wealthy man. We know he was a wealthy man. He had a lot of flocks, a lot of herds, a lot of animals. He also had a number of children. And I always say you can tell when somebody is wealthy because they own a big farm. I don't know if I've got any farmers here. I always get worried and anxious if you've got farmers here, because they like to tell you how poor they are as farmers. And you look at the houses they live in and you think, yeah. He had a lot of land, a lot of flocks, a lot of money, and a big family. And then in one day, he lost everything. All his animals died. All his crops were destroyed, and his children died. Not a good day. Not the kind of day that you and I would want to endure. Not a good day at all. At the end of the day, Job's wife said, "Don't know why you still believe in God when all these bad things have happened." And Job said, "That's all right, I'm still going to trust in God." And then a conversation takes place between him and three of his friends. At least I say they're friends. They come and they sit and they're silent for a while, which when somebody's gone through a bad experience, sometimes that's all it needs, is just to have somebody there with you. But then they start to talk. And the whole of what they have to say is, bad things happen to bad people. So if something's gone wrong in your life, it's got to be because you did something wrong. You don't need friends like that. Can I get a witness? You really don't need friends like that. Because the reality is, bad things happen to good people as well as bad people. And it's a mess of a world we live in. On top of which, the bad things that were happening to Job were not happening because he was a bad person. They were happening because God boasted about how good he was. But in that discussion that goes on between Job and his three friends, which is a very dark thing because it keeps coming back to, you wicked person, Job, because so much has gone wrong in your life. Within that, there are little highlights of Job's comment. Things like this. He says, "Whatever happens, I know that my Redeemer lives. And that one day, even though I lay this body in this grave, one day, with these same eyes, I'll look on my Redeemer." Which is an incredible thing to say. Back in the days when Job would have lived. Causing me to stop and say, I don't know what's going on in your life. Do you know that you have a Redeemer? Somebody who's paid the price for your sin, as Phil was talking about earlier in the service. Somebody who's paid the debt you owed for the wrong you and I have done. A debt we could not pay, that he paid on our behalf. And Job said, "I know that I have a Redeemer. And I know my Redeemer is alive. And I know that whatever happens in this life, one day, with these eyes, I will gaze on Jesus the Christ." He didn't know it was Jesus the Christ. He just knew it was a Redeemer that God was going to send. within those kind of bright things, you get to chapter 23, and that's kind of my introduction, all right? Because I wanted to bring you to chapter 23, because within within what Job has to say, and within those bright things, he's aware that in difficult situations, it's sometimes difficult to know where God is. And so when you get to chapter 23, Job starts and he says something like this: I wish I knew where God was. He then goes on and says, if I go forward, I don't see him. If I go backwards, I don't see where he is. I can see that he's been there, but I can't see him at this moment in time. Then he says, if I look on my left hand or on my right hand, I really don't know. I can see God must have been there, and I know he said he'll never leave me, but I can't see him. And I wish I could see him, and I wish I could talk to him, and I wish I could hear him. Now, I know none of you ever been in that situation, because you all have such great spiritual lives. You always know where God is, and you always know what he has to say to you. But some of us other mortals have been in those situations where things have been so bad, we wish we could see him, and we cry out, but we don't actually know what he's got to say. We read the scriptures, but somehow we don't get that witness within us that God is actually talking to us. And Job says, I wish that I could see where he was. And if I heard him, my friends are saying he'd tell me how bad I am, but I know he wouldn't do that. Because the God that I believe in, the God that I hope in, the God that I trust in, is a God who would plead for me on my behalf. That's beautiful. And then he says this in verse 10. And all of that is just so I could get to verse 10. Because in chapter 23 of the book of Job, and in verse 10, Job says this: I don't know where he is, but I know he knows where I am. And he puts it like this in the 23rd chapter, in the 10th verse. He said, he knows the way that I take. That's powerful. I'm living in Godmanchester at the moment. And Jenny and Phil know I'm living in Godmanchester, which it makes it easier for me to come to you than it was when I was living in Lincolnshire. I'm not sure about whether it was a good thing to get up early this morning, especially when the clocks have gone back. I think that should have been on the bad side, personally, Phil. But they knew, and I've now told you, and now in your mind, you have an idea of the path I've taken. The way I've come. I've come this morning from Godmanchester to Sandy. And Job says, even though I can't see him, God knows the path I've taken in life. He knows every step that I've taken. Day by day. He knows every part of my life, every part of my existence. He knows the way I take. He then goes on and says, and when he's finished with me, I will come forth as gold. So he says, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm going through what I'm going through. I don't know what the next step is, but I know what the destination is because God's already told me that. It's like those wonderful things, you know, you don't know, but you've got the last chapter of the book that you've already read. He comes and says, I don't know why I'm going through. Everything's been taken from me. Even his health was taken from him. He broke out across the whole of his body in boils and sores. I mean, you wouldn't even want to do that, would you? I mean, even one boil is not pleasant. But from head to toe to be... He said, I don't know why that's happened, but I know this, that at the end of my days, not only will I see God, but I will come out as gold. But I wish I knew what was going on. But the trouble is, God rarely gives us a pre-flight itinerary. He picks us up where we are and tells us where he's going to take us. And then we work it out day by day. He knows the way I take. I've told you, I told you I'm living in God Manchester now. I was just going to get it wrong. I told you that. You remember that. I told you I used to live in Lincolnshire. I told you now I live in God Manchester. Actually, I live with my wife in God Manchester. And I told you that that meant this morning we got up in God Manchester and we came to Sandy. You remember I told you that. That's good. And I said, so now you know the way I took. Except you don't. You know one of the ways I might have taken, I could have come down the back roads. I could have come down A1. I could have been driving. Judith could have been driving. You don't know because you weren't there. And the only way you'd know exactly the way that we took this morning is if you'd seen us as we left home and came down the road. The word that Job uses when he says, God knows the way I take, is a word that means he knows intimately every step, every heartbeat I have, every thought that goes through my mind. He knows, because even if I can't see him, I know he's there inside me. I was drawn to this portion in Scripture. Can I be honest with you? I tried three other passages this week that I preferred to preach on today, but God just kept bringing me back to Job, because I don't know who you are. I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't know whether you're in good days, bad days, or indifferent days. My guess is, if you're living in this country at the moment, you're probably not in the best of days you've ever been in. Because if you watch the BBC, they'll tell you that we're living through the worst days we've seen for years. Actually, I remember worse days, but that's a whole other thing. I was with my children this week because I got my birthday this week. And my son's young lady was saying, we don't know what to do because the interest rate for a mortgage is now 5%. And I said, I remember when it was 16.5%. And they all looked at me as a, really? How did you manage? I said, I don't know. But I'm here. A little while ago, I was with my son, and we were chatting about things, and he said, what did you used to watch on telly when you were a boy, Dad? And I said, we didn't have a telly when I was born. He said, what, really? I said, the first one came out almost as I was born. He said, what did they have before that? I said, nothing. He said, well, what did you do all day? He wasn't there. But the living God knows where you are, what's going on in your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Job says, he knows, because even if I can't see him, I know he's there. David said the same sort of thing years later, because he said, where can I go where God isn't? If I go to the furthest parts of the world, he's there. If I go to the bottom of the sea, he's there. If I ascend into the heavens, God is there. He is all around me. He is the God who knows. That's what I want you to understand this morning. If you get nothing else, understand he is the God who knows where you're at, sees where you're at, and has a plan for your life and a purpose for your days to bring you out as gold. Job then says, when he has tried me, in some of the versions it says, when he has tested me, in some of the versions it says, when he has examined me. The word that's used in the Hebrew word is a little word that says, when he's looked at me and checked me over. When I was in pastoral ministry up the road in St. Neots, one of my team from the ministry team, love him. He was always really good. He before I stood up to speak, he'd always come and just check me over. He used to check me over just to make sure that everything that should be done up was done up. Because there's nothing more embarrassing than everyone else is looking at you, but you don't see it. So he used to look me over. That's kind of the word that Job uses here. Because James says, don't ever think if you're tested, tried, or tempted, that God is the one who's tested, tried, and tempted you. Because God is not a God who will test, tempt, or try you. But he watches over you. He examines you. He looks at you. And he allows things to come into your life and into my life to bring us forth as gold. Paul takes that up in Romans in chapter 8, where Paul says something like this. We know that in everything God works for our good. Some of the versions used to say, we know that God, that all things work together for our good. That's not a good translation, because things don't work. Things don't work out either. What Paul said is, in everything that's going on, God is working his plan and his purpose out for my life. Same as Job is saying here. I don't know why I lost all my money. I don't know why I lost all my crops. I don't know why I lost all my animals. I don't know why I lost all my children. But I know this, that God, who is in control of my life, has still got a plan and a purpose. And his plan and his purpose is to bring me out without any dross left. I'm nearly done. I wanted to tell you a story. I heard it told originally, so it's a story, it's not one I've made up. I heard the story told originally, so it was Michelangelo that it was speaking about. You know Michelangelo, the artist, the sculptor, the guy who's been in trouble with the teachers in Florida, if you watch the BBC this week. One or two of you have done. But when I checked back, it wasn't Michelangelo. And in fact, we don't know who the sculptor was, but it was some sculptor. And the story goes like this. It's about a boy. And the boy recalls the story in this way in a book that was published in the 1800s, early 1800s. I remember when I was a little boy, a sculptor who had a rough shed in the backyard where he worked all day with mallet and chisel on his marble. One day there was hauled into his studio an unusually large piece of marble, uneven, ragged and soiled, but it was mounted up ready for the artist's chisel. I want you to picture that. Big bit of rock. Just comes straight out of the ground. Bits stuck out all over the place. Dirty. Looks like a piece of rubbish. And they put it up on a stand, ready for the sculptor to start. When I entered the studio, the sculptor was standing by it with his hand resting affectionately upon it, as though he were in love with it. He didn't notice me coming in, but seemed absorbed in the contemplation of this piece of marble. I remember how intently and fondly he looked at it, as though he was looking down into the center of it. Finally, I asked him, "What are you going to make out of that?" Looking up, he said, "I'm not going to make anything out of it. I'm going to find something within it." I didn't understand this, and so I asked, "Why? What are you going to find in it?" He replied, "There is a beautiful angel in this block of marble, and I'm going to find it. All I have to do is take the bits away that are obscuring him without damaging the angel that's left." You and I go through tough times sometimes. Knocks in our life. We don't know where they come from. Some of them come because the world you and I live in is not a wonderful, glorious place of peace and joy and happiness without any problems. Sometimes they come because the enemy of souls has got agreement from God that he can come and drop them upon you. But God's purpose is this: to take the beauty that he sees in you of the reflection of Jesus and take away all the bits that obscure that view until he brings you forth as perfect in his sight. In Ephesians, Paul talks about the way that God works on us. And Paul uses a powerful word. He says, "You are his masterpiece." It's translated very often as, "You are his workmanship." It's a bad translation. You are his masterpiece. He's a sculptor who in every circumstance of your life knows the way you're taking, is there and sees and walks beside you, and his sole purpose is to perfect you until the day that you gaze upon him and in awe and wonder worship. Amen. Let me pray for you and then I'll hand back to Phil. Father, I thank you for this opportunity to come among this people here in Sandy. And we come before you and we thank you that you are our God. We thank you for the wonder of your promises. We thank you that you are the God who never leaves us and never forsakes us. You are the God who knows us intimately and dwells within us by your Spirit. You are the God who has chosen to redeem us by sending your Son to bear away our sin. And I ask you for each one gathered into this place this day, that we might leave here with that sure and certain knowledge that whether we see you, whether we hear you, or whether you seem distant, you are still the God who knows the way we take. And you are the God who has a plan and a purpose that you will complete to make us your masterpieces for your eternal glory. Amen.